Thank you very much for providing me this short notice opportunity to talk about my current research interests since July 2006. I will be talking about the permutation test in gene microarrays. And the objective is to determine the genetic causes of type 1 diabetes. And here is a brief outline of my talk. Initially, I'll give a brief introduction of some classical procedures which do not work in case of the gene microarray data analysis. Then a little introduction of microarrays, and later how the test for interaction could be constructed using the permutation test. Then a little bit about the multiple hypothesis testing, and later the results. And here is the introduction, as some of you might be familiar with some classical statistical procedures. We mostly assume that the data distribution is normal, and most of these statistical procedures are based on this assumption of normality. And the reference distribution of the relevant test statistic under some null hypothesis H0 is assumed, and we test some sort of hypothesis and make some conclusions about our research hypothesis. But the problem is that in actual practice, most of the time these assumptions of normality are violated. And the best example is the biological data, the gene microarrays that I will be talking about. And here is a little bit introduction about the permutation test. This is an alternative to the classical procedure to tackle the problem of non-normality. Here we assume that the errors are non-normal, but somehow some sort of exact test could be possible. And we calculate the test statistic value for all possible simply permutations of the observations under the null hypothesis. And then we construct the reference distribution of the test statistic, and then we compute some sort of measure of confidence, or this is called the p-value, and this is the proportion of the statistic in the permuted set at least as extreme as the observed set. And how these permutation tests are constructed, we permute the vector of residuals under the reduced model, that is whatever our hypothesis is under, on the basis of that we permute the residuals, and this approach was initially given by Friedman and Lane in 1983. And Davison and Hinckley, they, in 1997, they mentioned to use the modified residuals instead of the raw residuals. And now a little bit about the microarrays. We have data on thousands of genes. And this is a study about the determination of the causes of type 1 diabetes in the mouse models, which would be used to determine the genetic causes of type 1 diabetes in humans later. And two of the genetic regions, which are IDD5 and IDD13, they are found to have some genetic susceptibility to diabetes. And the aim is to investigate the individual effect on diabetes of each of these genetic loci, the areas, and we have the four strains of mice, which are named as NOR, NORN, OD, IDD5, where NOR is the non-obese resistant type of mice, and NOD are the non-obese diabetic mice. And these are the four different types of the strains that we have. And the purpose is to detect the locus-locus interaction in the mice model. And here we have the two-way ANOVA model, where the log expression for the GH gene on the ith microarray could be modeled mathematically as this way. And here, this part, beta-3G, it looks like it's some sort of the regression model. and beta 3G is the coefficient for the interaction, and we want to test whether this interaction is significant or not. And here we have n arrays, and we have data on 12,488 probe sets. And here DI is the day effect, because samples are constructed on different days on the microarrays. And to test for the interaction, the SAM procedure was given by Tushar Tibshirani and Chu in 2001, where they use this modified Wahl statistic. And here F0 is the fudge factor, which is a percentile of the observed standard error of the beta 3s, which is the coefficient for the test of interaction. And this F0 is introduced into this test statistic to downweight the variability of some genes which would have very small variability. So we have n arrays and data on G genes, and we compute the observed statistic DG, which we call DG statistic, for each of the gene G. Then we fit a no interaction model as compared to the full model in the previous slide here. Here this beta 3 and this interaction term is excluded in the null model here, and otherwise it's the same model. Then we permute the vector of residuals within the day, and we permute the vector of residuals because we need to keep intact the joint structure of the genes on the arrays. And then we get the new permuted values as adding back those resampled residuals to the fitted values for the GH gene on the ith array. And then we compute the D statistic from the new data, and this process is repeated a large number of times. And then at the end, we compare the observed test statistic D to the permuted test statistic somehow. And how do we do that? This is actually a multiple hypothesis testing problem. We have G independent statistics with level alpha. And whenever we test some hypothesis in statistics, we make some sort of cutoff point before we start that we will have this much confidence or this much error we are willing to tolerate. And what happens when the number of hypotheses are very large, then this probability of at least one hypothesis being falsely rejected gets way far away from alpha. So we need some control of the type 1 error in multiple hypothesis testing problem. And different procedures have been used for that before. And one of those is Bonferroni correction. But in case of the SAM, Benjamini and Hochberg in 1995 gave this idea of the false discovery rate, where we define the false discovery rate as the expected proportion of the null hypotheses which are rejected, and those were actually true, and out of the total number of rejected hypotheses. Story and Tibshirani in 2003, they gave some algorithm for the computation of that. Different people, they have given different definitions for the FDR. And just like the p-value, here we have a q-value, which is an FDR analog of the p-value. And we define some cutoff point delta g, which is the largest value of delta at which that gene becomes significant. And we compute the q-value of that gene g as the minimum of FDR at that level delta, such that delta is less than or equal to that a cutoff point, largest cutoff value, delta G. And this Q value, just like P value, is used in microarrays. And this is the initial plot. Here I use delta equal to 0.7052, which actually depends on the difference between the observed and the expected differences. And this blue part shows something is going on in this area. There are some genes which are differentially expressed. Though these are the results of my very initial analysis, we are also validating the results. And later, this is the interaction plot for the topmost significant gene, which was showing the locus-locus interaction. And this is the IDD5 locus. It's two levels, 0 and 1. And it shows that if this is red line is for the other locus IDD13. This X shape is kind of interaction that is indicated that it is statistically significant for this particular gene, but whether it has some biological meaning or not, that is the question to the biologist. And the initial results, as I mentioned, that showed some estimated proportion of FDR as 0.33, and we used a cutoff point of 0.005 or less, and lots of genes were identified among 12,488 to have significant interaction effect. Initially, as I mentioned, that these are just the preliminary results, so we need to validate those. And after, if these are confirmed, then real-time PCR, which is another method that could be used to validate the results. And at the end, I would like to thank initially the organizers of the Fields Institute for giving me this opportunity to talk about my current research interests. And these are the acknowledgments. And I would like to thank Dr. Jane Danska and Dr. Tanya for providing this data, and great thanks to Dr. Angelo Canty at McMaster University for providing all this support. So if you have any questions that I could answer.
We need to thank you.
And I might not be able to answer because I started in this area working since July 2006. Like this cross actually indicates that the IDD513 is showing a different levels across different levels of IDD5, and it might be possible that this line, instead of crossing the red line, it could have been horizontally parallel to each other. So then we could say that there is no interaction between the two loci for this particular gene. The X shape shows that the mean